All right, we're going to try this again. Good morning, you beautiful bunch of fuckers, and welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Monday, March 11th. We are here live. I think I've got everything working now. We are testing our mobile setup today, so I am, technically I'm not on the road, but I set up over at the homestead as though I were on the road. So I had a little bit of a little fight with some of my equipment this morning, but I think we've got it. I also think we're going to be bringing Brent Hutto in early today to talk about the market conditions and rates and lanes. He's traveling today, so we're going to try to get him in here early. We can also get you in right now. Here is the phone number. It is 319-527-6791, or you can also hit the dial now button on your app, and that will get you in here as well. We've got a lot going on this week. It's going to start getting really busy. The CMC is coming up in, what do we got, like 10 days or so left? It's getting pretty close here. I'm going to be traveling this weekend. I'll be heading that way. I'm going to spend most of this week out at the homestead just working on the CMC presentation itself. I've got all the material put together. Just going to start tweaking it a bit and getting ready for the event. A lot going on at the truck show this year, too. So really looking forward to it. When I'm at a truck show, I'd rather just stay busy. I will be talking the entire time, whether I have events or not, and I'd rather be up on stage talking to a couple hundred people rather than stand in one spot and try to talk to one or two at a time. So a lot going on. I've got the CMC. I will be in truckstop.com's booth on Friday doing the show live. I've got a session with Brent on what they call the Pro Talk stage. I think that's only an hour. We're talking about surviving the downturn for owner-operators and small carriers. And I'm also doing a keynote speech at a driver dinner. So a lot going on. I see Brent is here. We're going to get him in here right away this morning. Brent, good morning.
Well, good morning, KR. I'm live from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Having a big time up here with one of my children. So, but this is a cool place. You know, this is Freight Alley, as they call it. So,
Freight Alley. That's right. That is the home of Freight Waves.
It's the home of Freight. Well, before that, yes, it is. Before that, it was the home of Covenant Transportation and U.S.
That's
Express
right.
Transportation.
That's right.
Names and all of trucking. So I love coming up here. It's a beautiful part of the country and absolutely love it. So busy with trucks going up and down the road. It's always good to be, good to see. I'm on a big bus right now that was taking a bunch of coral students back and forth doing performances. So been having a good time. But it's the start of the week, so it's good to be on with you. And man, I am so excited because we are 1 week away from Mid-America and CMC 2024.
You know, I was just talking about that. The CMC is big. I'm really excited about that. We haven't done the CMC since 2018. Can't believe it's been that long. So looking forward to getting back to that. I also realized that you and I are doing something on the Pro Talk stage too, I guess.
We sure are. You and I are doing a, you know, how to get into trucking for, you know, which you and I have done many times in the past. We're doing something on, I think it's on Thursday on the Pro Talk stage. It's either Thursday or Friday. I've got one each day. So one's with a broker and then one's with the same as Kevin Rutherford. So, and I've done these for a while. I love doing them because I just love helping owner-operators, you know, see more about what's possible in their businesses and stuff and just be a help. And then, you know, it kind of goes back to me and you and the partners in business days when we would be on stage for 3 hours So at least you would. I'd just be bouncing around making sure everybody was okay.
Making sure everything went smooth. So, you and I got a lot going on at the show. I'm going to be doing my my Friday show from the truck stop booth, too.
Oh, man, we are so excited about that. You and Henry Albert and Joel Morrow. And who's the other guy with you?
We're going to have Joel's business partner, Alec Kasteris, with us, too.
Okay. Yeah. So super excited to do that from our booth. And just to bring more activity and education and interest to the audience. You know, at the Truck Stop Booth, Kevin, it's really fun at the Mid-America Show because we get so many carriers that just come by and want to hang out. They want to see the new stuff
right.
and some of the new ways, some tips and tricks. But they just like to hang out and talk about how long they've used Truck Stop and how long they've been an owner-operator. And it's just fun, man. I love it. I absolutely love
it. Hey, I got a request, speaking of doing that on Friday in your booth. You better, on Thursday and first thing Friday morning, you need to get in there and pass some swag and some love around to the vendors around you because they're going to be pissed when everybody clogs up the aisles to hear us do the show.
Hey, you know what, Kevin? Every time we've had you in our booth, they're always pissed. But you know what? Let's Truck and Kevin Rutherford brings a crowd, so they're happy afterwards. Don't worry. They'll be plenty happy with all the great truckers that come by and want to see their booth after they've listened to the program and talked to Truck Stop. So super happy about that, man. Super happy about it.
Yeah. So I know you've got a lot going on today, so we want to get down to business and let you get on with the business of your day.
Yeah.
What's new and exciting in the market this week?
Well, let me give the freight update, and then I want to give owner operators a little heads up. You know, maybe I hate to say warning because look, it's this freight. There's always challenges in freight, but I want to give them a little heads up about something. So let me give you the freight update and what's going on. Well, so over the last 3 weeks, we've had the pressure in the market continue to increase, and I'll tell you what's causing the increase. So the market demand index, which is basically the amount of freight available over the amount of trucks that post themselves empty and ready to haul. Now, look, I realize most truckers don't post themselves on the load board empty and ready to haul, but we've been tracking this number for like almost 20 years, so it's a good measurement. All right,
Before we get to the detail, I want to stop because I'm glad you said that. We get this a lot. When we talk about the number of loads, rates that things are moving for, anytime we talk about any statistic from the load board, especially truckstop.com or any load board, there's a group that always wants to push back and say, that's not accurate. I know that load got posted three different times. We get this constantly. And it makes me a little crazy. There's even a group that really believes that you are putting out data to manipulate the market. I mean, they complain about every bit of data. And my response to them was, if you don't like this data, go create your own. We depend on certain entities in the industry to come up with this data, and Truck Stop is one of the biggest. You guys move a lot of loads. You have a lot of data.
And what people
don't seem to understand, all data can be flawed. You have outliers.
Oh, sure.
You have false information. There's no way around it. But you guys also... I'm going to say this. I don't know that it's absolutely true, but I have to believe it's got to be close. You guys have, like, data scientists that this is all they do clean up the data and make it as accurate as it can be, given the fact that we know all of those things are going to occur.
Yeah. Kevin, I'm so glad you said that, because here's the reality. Number one, Truckstop doesn't control the data. The brokers that post the data control the data. Okay, so now... But now it's our responsibility to make sure that data is accurate. So you talked about, I know that load's posted three times. Well, it could be. During the pandemic, shippers, the manufacturers, were giving their freight to two, three, four, five brokers because guess what? Rates were so high and there were so many loads in the market, you couldn't, there weren't enough trucks to move a third of it. And so
right.
the shipper has to get the goods to market. Here's a pro tip. The shipper always defaults to getting the goods to market over rate every time, because they have to get it to the market, because if it doesn't sell, they don't make a profit, and the people in the transportation department at that shipper gets fired. Okay, so super important to know that. But
hey,
the broker,
keep interrupting you, but you're making such good points. I want to kind of highlight them. Think about this. What you just said, I don't know that we've ever talked about that. It's a really good point. The shipper is always going to default to getting that load to its customer, even if it has to. And here's an analogy. It would be like an owner-operator pulling up to the fuel pump and going, over $4 a gallon? Oh, hell no, I'm just going to park till that comes back down. You don't do that. You pay
what you have to pay for
fuel to get your job done. Right. The shipper's the exact same way. They're going to pay whatever they have to pay in the market to get the freight to their customer.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Without a doubt, that's super. It's one of the most important things to know. And every shipper I talk to always says, "Oh yeah, absolutely," because we have to get goods to market, because that's how they make their profit. Shipping is only the transportation is only like somewhere between 6 and 9% of the total cost of the product. So it's a minor part. Like fuel is not all of the cost for the trucker. It's just necessary, right?
Right.
So it's the same thing. So you've got all these shippers. So what you see in any load board, it doesn't matter if it's ours, truck stops, or any other load board in the market, there's always what are known as duplicates. All right, not fake loads, not ghost loads, but those are bad. And we actually write code to take those out. All right, so just so you know, just so the audience knows and the truckers know, truck stop is so concerned, and we hear from carriers all the time. We actually write code, an algorithm that changes that kind of takes as many of those out as possible. We even requested the way that brokers post loads, so it actually works within an algorithm. So my point to the audience is that when you see something in the market, what you're going to see is you're going to see what are known as unique loads, and that's one load posted by one broker. All right, a single broker, it's not posted by any other broker, but the shipper may work with a couple of brokers, and they may give that freight to a couple of brokers. And so you may have broker A that's posted it for, let's just say, $1,500, and you've got broker B who has a totally different operation and has a lower cost ratio, so they're able to post it for more money. You may have broker B with the same freight that posted for $1,600 or $1,650 or $1,700, because they have a totally different cost structure. Just like you and I both know, not all truckers have the same cost structure. So
exactly.
This is why. So there's uniques and duplicates. Now look, we hate ghost loads and fake loads and phantom loads like anybody else, and so we do our best to work with the audience that's out there to try to work through that and make it as clean as possible. It's super important that the audience knows that. So what's going on in the market right now is that the market demand index has continued to go up. And here's what's going on. The freight is continuing to creep up, which is good, which means rates will start to come up eventually some. It'll be very slow, but rates will start to come up. Rates went up one penny week over week. The interesting thing is the reason that the pressure in the market went up was because more and more truckers are exiting the market. All right, so we're having an adjustment. We're having an adjustment of capacity, or the trucks available in the market, to kind of continue to work its way up. That's a natural thing in the market where that owner-operator may leave the for-hire market, the independent market, and go back to the leased owner-operator market, or may park his truck for a month or two while he or she goes and does something else. So it's just a natural thing in the market. So that's kind of what's going on. Rates moved up a little bit. Like I said, there was more freight in the market available this week than last week. I don't have the data right in front of me, but my guess is it went up maybe 10,000 loads or something like that. But you know, Kevin, the data is accurate. It's true. We see about 150 million or more load postings a year, and when you've got that much data put into a system, it's just not going to be inaccurate. And if it was put in by one company, I'd get it. But it's put in by 10,000 brokers, and so it's not going to be manipulated. It can't be manipulated.
Let's talk about something else, because you're right. I love the way you explained that. I hope people understand that. We can get past all of this wasting time arguing about this. But let's talk about this. You talked about, if you've got 150 million of anything, you have to be good at handling it, managing it, and all that. But
100%.
But I remember
a whole data science department that does it. Yeah.
Yeah. I also remember. I think it might have been Scott himself that told me the story of how he started truckstop.com. He was on his way back from a road trip somewhere in the Southwest.
Yeah, he was driving back for his dad. Yeah, driving a car back for his dad across the from California back to Idaho.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
And he saw a billboard, I think, advertising loads for truck drivers. And
loads to anywhere.
Now, at that time, Scott had nothing to do with the trucking industry, right?
Yeah, well, nothing specific. When he was a junior in college, now he's a computer geek. He's one of those guys,
right.
You know. And he was at Oregon State, and he worked for one semester at a local brokerage company, helping him just do the computer stuff.
Okay.
So that's how he kind of was like, oh, well, hey, this makes a little sense. So he had just a little bit.
I think people are going to be surprised because we're talking about an internet program here that he created. What year was this?
Oh, this was the spring of 1995.
Most people didn't even know what the internet was.
Well, it had just come out, but Scott knew the internet. You know why? Because before the internet became public, he was working in Washington, D.C. after he got his graduate in physics, basically, from Texas A&M. He was working in D.C. for the Department of Defense, trying to get him to use this new thing called the internet to work with global communication. They said, we're never going to do that. And so he knew the internet really, really well.
Yeah. So first off, I love the story, but it also
– Oh, it's such a great story, yeah.
So that's how long – truckstop.com has been working on getting the data right. So not only do you have a lot of data, you work on it every year, you've been working on this stuff for a long, long time.
28
and
years,
I just love the story of this young kid starting this company and what it has become today.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great story.
It is one of the best stories ever, man. And I'll tell you, here's the thing that I want every carrier to hear, and so does Scott Moskowitz, and so does Kendra Tucker, our CEO now, and then all 850 of TruckStop's employees want the truckers to know is TruckStop was created in 1995 because Scott Moskowitz saw that the carriers, the small owner-operators in the market, didn't have access to the information they need to run their business. And he's like, I'm going to do something about that. To put that information out there so they can fight a fair fight or have a fair negotiation with the broker, the marketplace. And he knew this. He knew that any relationship that's equally balanced grows. And he said, if I can balance that out, then the marketplace will grow. And guess what? Freight in the spot market has gone from 5% of all the freight in the United States. So now it's like 30%. So every carrier that uses the spot market, load boards, TruckStop being one of them, now has access to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of loads, no matter what, you know, whether you're a flatbed or a refrigerated, a dry van, a specialized, whatever. By the way, Hotshot is growing like crazy in the spot market. So
that's awesome.
When there's balance, that's what you want, man. That's what you want. I got to go in just a couple of minutes, but one thing. I want to give a heads up to carriers that are out there, okay? And I heard this a couple of weeks ago, and I may have said this to you but I want to say it again. If I didn't, I'm going to say it now. It's a difficult market. You know that. Every carrier in America knows that. Every broker in America knows that. It's a difficult market. If you transport goods for a living, that's how you make your profit and your money. It's not near as easy. As a matter of fact, it's a challenge right now. Margins are thin, all right? Here's what I want to give a heads up to carriers. I want you to double check every broker you're doing business with, not just because of fraud. I want you to double check their financial health because you're going to see more brokers go out of business than ever before in trucking because they're now in the second season of thin margins in this industry. And by the way, the broker makes thin margins too when the market's down. Okay,
right.
Not just carriers. So the ones that, like, there's an article in FreightWaves that talked about a logistics company in I think it's Appomattox, Virginia, that just went bankrupt, owing people millions of dollars. Guess when they started? 2021.
I posted about this
they
company.
Well, there you go. They started in 2021. They're now bankrupt, out of business. Hey, it's a family business. My heart breaks for them. I'm so sorry for them and their business that's a fail. But my point to carriers out there is that don't just check against fraud, but definitely check hard against fraud, because there's lots of crazy people in the market right now. But look, make sure you check some of the financials of these companies, because there's going to be more of them that go out of business, Kevin, because here's why. We're in the second season of a hard market, all right, a second season. And so more people go out of business in the second season.
All right, I got two things from that if you've got time. One,
I do.
Yeah, one, I'm absolutely right there with you, and that's why I posted about that company. I said you've got to be checking the financial and the creditworthiness of the brokers you're working with now more than ever. And I'm also going to start making a slight change to my model of, you know, 3 to 5 good brokers, stick with them, get the bulk of your freight from them. If any of the brokers in your team, in your world, are even showing any sign of some financial difficulties, and it wouldn't be surprising, this is also a time you might want to spread the work around to more brokers so you don't get too deep in with just one.
Yep, fair statement. 100% fair statement, man. Absolutely. And I'm not picking on brokers just like I'm never.
No, I'm not either.
I don't want any. I don't want any business to go out of business, man, at all. We want to help everybody grow. But we also want to make sure
this
truckers get
kind
paid.
Of advice.
Yeah.
Right. Make sure your brokers are solid. There are going to be brokers that will get through this just fine, but there's going to be a lot that don't. And you've got to figure out that's your responsibility. Here's what a lot of owner operators don't understand. I try to explain to them, hey, remember when you went in and tried to buy a car and they made you fill out all that paperwork and they did a credit check and they knew everything about you? When you accept a load, you are doing the same thing. You are extending credit to another business, and you better do that same kind of work to make sure they're credit worthy.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now, we do some of that checking on truck stop. Yeah, you can start some of that, but you better do it. You better. Here's the thing. The person that's in charge of your – if you own a business, the person in charge of that business is Y-O-U. It is you. You have to make sure. You can't blame anything on anybody else. You've got to make sure of it yourself, because in any business you go into, it's always buyer beware. You know, you have to make sure of it yourself. And so this is why we work so hard on our end to help, so they can really get that information quickly.
Now, one more thing, and you and I are going to talk about this a lot going forward. Most of your owner, operator, small carrier customers, you and I have talked about this a lot. Not only do you have data on load, you have data on how your users use your system, and you look at it all the time so you can improve the system and make things better for them. So we know how they interact with the load board. We've talked about it. They log in, they do a search for a load, they sort by rate, they start calling what they think might be the best rate, and then if they find a load, they move on, and they do this over and over and over. And most of them are very happy to pay their small monthly fee to Truck Stop for that service, the load board. But what they're missing out on is, even though you're not paying all that much, you guys have so many tools. Not just for searching for loads. You have tools to show them their negotiating strength in any load. You do have tools to look up brokers. There's so much in your system that a lot of the owner-operators and small carriers never touch. They probably don't even realize it's there. And they're already paying for it. We just want to help them start using it more.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I tell you, one of the things that every carrier needs to use is the negotiation strength. So you look at what's called lane density and how much freight is not in the market that you're in and find a well. How much freight's going to be in the market that if you're looking for a load from like Des Moines to Atlanta, how much freight's coming out of Atlanta going the direction you want to go? And so you can do all this, and because that tells you, you know, what you're going to be able to negotiate once you get there. And so all these things are kept in mind. Yeah, there's so many pieces of the puzzle on there. We've got data science built into our pricing models. When the trucker looks up rates, it's all data science back. And what I mean by data science is they take a tremendous amount of data and do all the hard work for you. You know, data science is just a word, but what is it
right.
really do for you? So, yeah,
right.
So absolutely, man. So you and I are going to keep talking about this. It's about speed and efficiency, man. You're getting the load as quickly as you can so you can get the best rate, this load at the highest rate.
So you and I both know that in any market, whether at the top of the market, the middle of the market, the bottom of the market, on any given day, there are lanes where you have almost no negotiating strength, right? Even at the top
of
the market, there were times where you could be in a lane where there were just too many trucks and not enough freight. No matter how hot the market is, when you're in a lane like that, one, the rate's not going to be that great, and two, you don't have much negotiating power. And if you understand that, you can just grab a load and reposition. Don't get too crazy about, I'm not pulling that freight. That's too. No, just understand where you are in the market. Now, in a market like this where everybody is talking about how horrible things are, the rates are bad, there's not enough volume, that is the general thought process, and it's going to be for a while. But the mistake owner-operators and small carriers make is they get to the point where they feel like every lane is going to be like that, and that's not true right?
Yeah.
On the worst day of the market, there's going to be a lane where there's huge demand for trucks, right?
There's lots of marketplaces, and I look this up every week, looking at different ones that have changed. I see the top, like, 10 or 20 lanes, and what I look for is the ones that have changed the most. In other words, they've gone from a lower amount to a higher amount, and I look at them every single week. So, yeah, there's all kinds of lanes. And this is why you want to know your data. You want to know how to search, where to search, what season are you in, where can you get better rates in different parts of the country. Because last time I checked, trucks can go anywhere.
Yeah, and I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag. When we're in a market like this, brokers know the rate. They do this all day long. This is all they do.
Yeah.
Owner-operators drive all day.
Yes,
they
sir.
Don't
they sure
necessarily
do.
Know the rates. They're at a disadvantage here, and the broker knows it. And this might sound bad, but it's not. This is just business. The brokers are struggling, too. They stay in business.
Yeah.
They know they're getting hammered on some lanes. They're actually losing money on some of these loads. And any time they can make it up, they will. And they know that these guys aren't watching the rates. And they know, hey, look, everybody's talking about how bad the market is, but look at this lane. We've got this lane. They are going to squeeze a little more profit out of that lane because the owner-operators don't understand that there are some lanes with high demand. And if you know that, then you won't get sucked in by that. The broker's going to try to keep as much of that margin as they can, just like you're going to try to get as much of that margin as you can. That's business.
Any business, that's business.
Nothing
that's
wrong
business
with either one. But if we're smart enough to understand what they're doing and we're smart enough to say, hey, we may not have as much time, but we have access to that same data, and you guys make it quick. If we go that lane, if we go look at the negotiating power, we would see that.
Yep. Look at the negotiating power and just look at the, you know, one of the great things, and then I got to run, Bud, because I got to jump off. I got to make sure these kids are all getting their food and not running around the malls torturing people. If you've got, here's the situation. If anything, if you have the same data as somebody else, then it makes the negotiation more relational and more fair. If you're an owner-operator and they're wanting to pay $2.20, and you know in the lane right now it's going for $2.35, you can say, look, I looked on truckstop.com or I looked on this other big load board, and it was $2.35. That's a fair market rate. That's fair, right? Because people like to be fair with each other.
Right.
Can we work towards that? Can we work? Not, can I demand it? Because guess what? They own the freight at that point, and you don't.
Right.
But can we work? I teach this to all my kids. I always say, go up and ask people if they can help you. hey, can you help me with this? Can you help
oh, that's
me
awesome.
Get to that rate, Mr. Broker?
Yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
says that, because you know what? Everybody likes to help somebody.
Yeah,
so
they
can
do.
Can you help me with
that's
that rate?
Right.
And I tell you what, you will find better rates across the board when you take that approach than any other thing you're ever going to use, man. Well, Kevin, it's been great
hey,
being with you this morning,
wait,
as always,
one
buddy.
One more thing real
yes,
quick.
Sir.
You're going to like this.
Yeah, buddy. What you got?
Because I've been working on all my material. Remember, the CMC is a year-long program now after we kick it off at Mass.
I know. I
am excited, and you and I haven't really talked about this yet. You and I are going to spend a lot of time during the year in the CMC getting people to be absolutely 100% masters of your system and all of its tools.
Man, I couldn't think of something better, and I'm so excited to continue to work with you and continue to help owner-operators chase their dream, and so it just, man, I get up every day excited about it, man. Can't wait for next week in Mid-America to kick this off, Kevin. Thank you.
All right.
And Let's Truck for doing what you're doing, man. Thank you for being who you are. I appreciate that.
Excited about it. Thanks to truckstop.com. We have a lot of resources. It's going to be an awesome program, and we'll let you get on with your day, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, KR. Talk to you soon, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. All right. We're going to go to the phones, but I see right now we've only got one phone call. So if you want to jump in, now is the time. 319-527-6791 or hit the call now button on your app. We're going to get started today on the calls in Texas. Tony, welcome.
Hey, Kevin. Good to hear you. I got in a little bit late, about 14 minutes. How are you doing? I missed your intro. What I miss?
Oh, yeah, the usual these days. We had two or three intros till I got the technology right. I'm testing our new mobile system that I'm going to be taking to Matt's with me, and it's a little more complicated. One, because when we work to our own software, we have new hardware we're going to be using, so I'm testing some of that. But on the week I'm at Matt's, because of the CMC and travel, the only show we're doing that week is on Friday at Matt's, and we'll be in the truckstop.com booth. And I've got my three co-hosts with me. So normally when I travel, the equipment I take with me is really only enough for me to do the show by myself, because that's usually I'm on the road. I just need to get the show done. But I've got to take enough equipment this time to have three other hosts with me. And that's all new, so we're kind of trying to test it this week. So my open was late. We had some technical issues. And then once I came on, I really just on right away because he's traveling this week, so we had to get him in early. So you didn't really miss much. We were talking about rates and the market and the load boards and data and that kind of stuff, and brokers, of course.
Oh, I did miss something. Well, before I make everybody's day and start hating on brokers like I know they want to hear, I got to say, the phone system today is just really good. Whatever it is, like if it's the old one or not, you sound good, and I can hear you, and it's clear.
So
just keep that up.
So here's what happens. Right now we have two phone systems that we can access to do a show, and one of them, we identified that problem that my voice sounds really good on the air, but boy, when we were talking to the callers, it was breaking up and fading in and out. And we identified the problem, but nobody knew how to fix it. We worked with the other companies. They didn't know why it was happening. So you would think, well, just use the other phone system then. And we do, except this phone system is just finicky overall, and some days we go in to start a show and it's so buggy we can't even get things working. So we've been bouncing back and forth. We did identify the problem, and we were able to solve it on this platform. And we also know, we did a pretty good test of our new platform on Friday. We may do another one today. We have this problem solved on our platform. We still have a lot of bugs we're working on, but we know we've got this one fixed. So we're pretty excited about that. And our goal is for me to be using our software at least by the time I travel to Matt's. If not, maybe this week. We'll see. might be close. Maybe towards the end of the week, we may give it a shot on a real show.
That's right. You did say that you had some trouble at the beginning, but it has been fixed. I told Paul that I'd be there on that Friday. I think that's going to be the best day for me to go. Of course, with all the difficulty that I'm having with truckstop.com, I think everyone does need to register for the CMC to, you know, just get everything they can out of it. But yeah, I'm having trouble. I wish I would have gotten Brent.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Since you're going to be there on Friday, that's perfect. Right about the time the show opens, or darn close to it, I'll be going live on my show at the truckstop.com booth, and they bring a ton of people, and it's a perfect place to sit down, learn the system better, learn some of the tools you may not even know exist, and work out any problems you've got. If you're having issues and problems, go do it face-to-face right there at the show.
Well, the last thing I want to do is even think about brokers. The only reason everybody knows, and they love when I get on and talk like this. You don't know this, but I get feedback, and I like it because I think, and I know you love when I call in and hate on brokers because you're impartial to everybody, which is
that's right.
So strong. I love that. Very, very confident. I was thinking today, this new thought that I had, you know, for people that want to make their money off of truck drivers, I'm talking about brokers.
Right.
That's good. That is good. That's good for us. Why? That means we're doing well. There is money to be made off of us, and we can use that to our advantage.
I agree with that, but let me just turn it around a little bit in the way you're saying it. Because I understand why you're saying it like that. No, I know you are. And, you know, there's always a little bit of truth in a joke or it wouldn't be funny. And there's truth in this. But in reality, let's think about the flow of money here. The broker doesn't make a penny from the carrier. The broker makes its money from the shipper. That's where the money comes from. Now the broker.
Yeah, well,
makes,
and here's where you know I could get everybody
taking,
on my side,
taking the amount the shipper is paying them, and let's just be real and honest. This is how business works. They have an amount the shipper is willing to pay them to move this freight. They do want to give as little of that as possible to the carrier. I mean, because the difference is their true revenue. So you can't make money in business unless you have money coming in and revenue. So in reality, they want to move that freight as cheap as they can and keep the margin. But they technically don't make a penny off of owner-operators or carriers. They make their money off the shipper.
Right. And so since I get like 5% of the airtime and 95 I'm going to have to make it count. I could get everyone on my side in that 5% of the time by saying one thing. And I believe me, I know what everybody that they pretty much know my thoughts on brokers. I know what they want me to say, and I could say it, but I'll wait for the right time. When I've said it before, when you think of transportation, who do you think of? It's not brokers, right? So that's where I usually start. But as long as you know that one plus,
but I want to come back to
one,
that.
Just as long as you know that one plus one does not equal three, I think I know your stand on brokers.
Yes, and I'm about to tell you what it is. No, I'm not going to tell you what it is. We're
yours.
Going to,
I know yours,
right.
But for people that, you know, anyone that knows that one plus one does not equal three should get the right answer about the relevance of brokers.
Right. But let's explore this for a minute because this is an interesting topic. Let's say that the owner operators and small carriers finally get their wish. Now, this isn't the wish of all of them. Some people actually understand how business works, and they don't say the majority of the owner-operators I've worked with and many of the small carriers, and I'm talking really small, 25 trucks and under, many of them, I've heard them say it over and over and over. Brokers shouldn't even exist. Why do we have to have brokers? I mean, I've heard this over and over and over. So let's explore that. What do we think the spot market, and look, if you are 25 trucks or less, you are going to spend a lot of time in the spot market. If you're five trucks or less, you're going to spend an awful lot of time in the spot market. And if you're one truck, you may spend all of your time in the spot market. So let's think about that. What would the spot market look like without brokers? Tony, you're in Texas right now, right?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
Frisco. It's
so
right
if you were
Dallas.
In Texas, if you were in Texas and there were no brokers, where would you find your freight?
Well, yeah, everybody knows that. And so
no, they don't. No, they don't, because I hear people all the time say brokers shouldn't even exist. Okay, get rid of them. Now, where are you going to get your freight?
Well, shippers would find us. You know, these brokers are taking advantage. You know, I could see why these independent contractor agents.
How are shippers going to find you, Tony? How are they going to find you?
I could see why the lay person like me that doesn't know as much as you about the market would say that, you know, these brokers are taking advantage of us. Why don't they open a trucking company? Because they don't have what it takes. I know all of that. People love hearing
it.
Why don't you get a real job? Brokers don't have the right to exist because they aren't doing the hard work. I'm doing the hard work. All of you guys are doing the hard work.
Oh, you don't even know what the hard work is then.
Oh, yes, I've heard you.
No, you don't.
Yeah, talking on the phone is hard. Yes, I agree. I agree. I don't want to do that.
Not just talking on the phone. Not just talking on the phone.
But they're home every night.
One of the
They are home every night, so they don't count.
So what? You chose this.
I identify with those people that are saying that.
I absolutely hate when truck drivers bring up their work conditions. You chose this. You knew you were going to be gone.
I hate when people bring that up. I did not choose that. I'm home. I'm not home every night because of brokers.
Well, then get out. Stop using brokers then, and I guess you'll be home every night, right? Just don't use them.
Yeah, because I'll definitely have higher paying freight.
Well, why aren't
you
doing that?
I'm kind of joking, but I can see people
saying that. Why aren't you doing
that? We are trying our best to get there. And brokers are not helping. This part about being a customer. No, they are not our customer. I need to put them out of business is the way I can see people looking at this.
Hey,
how else are we supposed to think?
I would be off. I will help you do it. If a carrier came to me and said, look, I don't think brokers should exist. I'm going to go compete directly with these guys. I'm going to go to the same shippers they're going to, and I'm going to take that freight. I will help you do it. I'll help you do it. But it's not going to happen.
I am trying that.
Now, I won't say it's not going to happen for each.
Yeah, which is why I am starting to see that they are necessary, because I do hear what you're saying.
Right. Now, I do have, we have people who call here all the time. One truck, one driver, they do have shipper direct freight. It happens once in a while.
Yeah, I had some
too. Easy.
It was dirty.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of work. It's not easy to get, but occasionally it happens. But let's go back, because you talked about, you know, me knowing more about the industry. Here's one of the things I was able to see happen, so I have a better understanding of this. Remember, deregulation happened in 80, 81. And prior to deregulation, brokers almost didn't exist. Now, what you
have... I love that. Keep going.
Companies like C.H. Do you know how C.H. Robinson got started?
Oh, God.
They were not a freight broker, because we're going back to like the 1930s or 40s, if I remember right. They've been around a long, long time. They were a produce broker.
What's this about brokers trying to become carriers now, too, where you go in and the bill of lading does not say your name. It says the broker's name. Like, what is with that? They're trying to be something that they're not.
No, that's not true. We're all trying to fight freight fraud, and there's a lot of ways that that could be accomplished, and some of this has to do with that. But I want to go back. There were almost no freight brokers prior to deregulation. There were things like produce brokers who were moving freight. They actually owned the produce, and they needed to move it, or they were a broker in the middle of the produce. So right after deregulation was when I started in the industry. And when I used to go into a shipper, and I used to go into shippers all day long because I would do 20 to 30 stops a day. I was doing local P&D, so I was at shippers all day long. Back then, the shipping department on some of these companies was 15, 20, 25, 30 people, all worked in the shipping department because they had to. That's how hard it was to find a truck on the spot market. You had to have people on the phones all day long. Well, where does that happen now? That doesn't happen in the shipper. They don't have big shipping departments anymore. They outsource that to brokers. So now brokers
have a room full of people
that are on the phone all day. That's what happened, and shippers do not want to go back to having all of those people on their payroll.
Then they're incompetent. I can see how people would think this.
It
shouldn't take that much to find a truck.
There was a time where the freight industry got by without brokers. But if it were to happen today, if brokers disappeared today, the freight market would collapse tomorrow because the shippers don't have the ability to work with individual carriers anymore. They don't have the office. They don't have the people.
Oh,
they don't have the tools.
Again,
they don't have the knowledge. They don't know how to go find individual shippers. That's why they use brokers. And if we took brokers out of the picture without giving shippers time to go back to those big shipping offices, the whole market would collapse.
We disagree. I think you can talk on this. I think you want to talk on this for a while. What is this 90-day pay that I know Matt has to deal with? Who in the hell? And even brokers, 30-day pay? How are we letting them get spoke on interest and lending credit? Yeah, how are they getting away with that? I want my money now. When I go to the dentist, I better pay now or I'm not getting my teeth cleaned.
Hey, Tony, when you buy a truck, how many people actually pay for it now? Almost none. In fact, it takes them 5 years, 6 years, not 90 days. It takes six years.
Yeah, but
years.
That's because they don't pay us for 90 days on our freight. We have to keep paying that interest or we would be able to pay cash for a truck.
We could pay every owner-operator before they pulled the load. They still wouldn't go pay cash for a truck.
Well, because there's incompetence, I'll give you that. But look, they're not helping us
any.
30 days,
about, Tony. That all businesses extend credit. It's a common practice. We take advantage of it all the time. If somebody wants to let us pay for something over time, we take it. It can improve our cash flow. So credit is how business works. Now, here's how this works.
Okay.
So most businesses will not cut checks every day to pay people. That's not how their office works. The accounts payable department usually has 1 day a month where that's what they do. They pay all their bills.
Yeah, I wish C.H. Robinson does. I know that because
hold on.
They wait 20 days for every one of my never any sooner.
Well, hold on. So now let's think about this. If they only pay their bills once a month, and that's common across all businesses, all bills. We're not just talking about trucking here. When they order something from a printing company, they don't pay for it right now. They have net 30 is the term we're talking about here. They have 30 days to pay it. Here's what happens. let's say their day of the month to pay their bills is just the first day of the month. Let's just pick an easy day. It's the first day of the month. Well, what happens if you submit your bill on the second day of the month? It's not going to get paid for a month at least. You could also get
stuck in there. What does that have to do with waiting 30 days on every single load? Like they're counting the days.
Because here's what happens then. Then smaller companies, or sometimes big companies, will say, hey, look, everybody's used to paying us in 30 days, because that's always been our term, net 30. Well, we're going to take advantage of that. They agreed that we're not going to pay them for 30 days, so no matter what day they submit their bill, we're just going to hold that money for 30 days, and they make money off holding money. It's just how business works.
I don't see how that has passed. Other
now,
than
there
we're
are
just
there are also companies that are
to demand payment immediately.
Here's something else you got to know. There are companies out there big enough with enough clout, and they pay good shipping rates, and they have been able to say to their big carriers that they work with directly or their brokers, we're just not going to pay you for 90 days. That's the terms. Net 90, not net 30. They could do net 60. They could do net 45. It's anything anybody will agree to. And a lot of shippers have gotten carriers and brokers to just say, look, you're just going to wait 90 days till we pay you. There's another reason why most owner-operators would fail the minute we took the brokers out of the picture. It's another reason why brokers need to get paid a little more, because they're floating that money for 90 days while they pay the carrier sometimes in 10 or 20.
I could use the word necessary evil, but what's happening here is that nobody wants to pay their bills except us.
Well,
and we're getting screwed
stop the whining, oh, poor us. Every business deals with this. Everybody. There are brokers out there right now saying
it's not
the same
right
thing we're saying. Oh, my God, if my shippers would just pay me sooner, I could stay in business. So don't say we're the only ones paying our bills. We're not.
A month full of fuel without any pay.
Well, how does a broker
run? The only excuse would be to get out of business.
The broker might not be getting that load paid to him for 90 days. How does he keep his office open?
Well, I mean, there is something to be said for doing the right thing, to buying the fuel, doing the work, and then somebody doesn't pay you. That puts the guilt on them. People are loving this, by the way, getting feedback coming in as we speak. We just have to keep doing what we're doing, and if the brokers don't want to pay, they have to listen to me,
Tony,
killing them about it, and maybe one day they will do the right thing and pay us.
No, it's not the right thing. Forget the right thing. This isn't moral. This is business.
You're telling me that it's right to steal my money? Come
Wait
on.
Wait a minute. Stop.
Pay me
are
when
you
I
saying,
deliver the load.
Are you saying somebody never pays you?
Yes.
Okay. Then you have some recourse, not a lot. And I will tell you, extending credit to people is risky. That's part
and
of this
part
though.
About broker credit, I have never really had to fight for that much for payment. They've always paid me. I've never had a problem in 12 years. I know that might be an
right
outlier, but I'm not afraid of that part of brokering. I should be. I'm afraid of the 30 days.
You just said 12 years. We've had a really good run the last 12 years, so there wasn't a lot of that going on. All this stuff we're afraid of happens now in this market. This is where we have to start being careful. You're right. You could not do any of this work. You didn't have to check the credit on your brokers. For the last 10 or 12 years, you could get by with that and never get burned. You're an example. You just said, I never once didn't get paid. But that's about to change. When we're at the bottom of the market, the risk of not getting paid goes way up. Getting paid later and later becomes more common because the brokers are struggling with cash flow in this market. So all of those, this is another example of why this long run-up since about 2010 is now bad for a lot of people, because if you got into the market since 2010, you don't even know how a down market works and how ugly it can get. You're already bitching about slow pay, not getting paid. You haven't seen anything yet. This is going to get worse. It's why we talk about it. Stick with a couple of good brokers. Check their credit. Continue to check their credit at least once a month. Make sure they're not falling behind. Go back and look at your records. How long do they normally take to pay you? And if their average is 19 days and all of a sudden you find out it's 27 now, that's a red flag. And what you need to do is not extend as much credit. So if you book a load with a broker and you're a little worried about their finances, don't book another load with that broker till you get paid for this one. You're going to have to spread the work around a little bit in a market like this. But here's really the problem in all of this. What we're talking about here is ignorance. Ignorance of how business works and how this business works. And when you understand that the things that these small carriers bitch about is common everyday practice in our industry, and it's never going to change. You can bitch about it all you want. But if you understand the game, then you can win the game. The problem is too many of these small carriers are just ignorant of how all this works. My first day of the CMC this year, the first morning, I could do the whole first morning without ever using the word truck or fuel or maintenance, because all I'm going to talk about is business itself, not even the trucking business. Just business, because if you don't have that base of knowledge, and most don't, you just get frustrated because you don't understand how to play the game.
There's a lot of cheating in business, and I call this 30-day pay part of it. And the only excuse would be to get out of trucking.
Tony,
just get out,
Tony,
and drive the
love tanker.
It's
not cheating because everybody agrees to it. It's not cheating. Everybody agrees. Yes, you do.
I only agreed to it because I have no choice.
Look at your –
I
have
no choice. I have to agree to it, or I could get out of trucking. And it is looking like I'm driving the love tanker.
I will say this, that in trucking, you are correct on this one. All freight moves on credit. Nobody pays up front. And that's so rare that you're right. If you're going to be in this business, you do have to extend credit. Well, there is another way. There are several ways you could get around this. You could use brokers that offer a good deal on quick pay and go ahead and give up a couple percentage points and just get your money right away so you're not extending credit. You could factor your loads so that – and you could do it with non-recourse.
Nah, that's not any alternatives. Let me hit you with this before I forget, because I'm trying to listen, but I've got for you to cover that you never have before, self-insured. Isn't there some sort of way where you could get that $1 million bond with the FMCSA, pay for it like on credit, so that you don't have to be bound to an insurance company? Isn't that a better way to get insurance?
Wait a minute. I heard bond and insurance, two totally different things. What are we talking about here?
Self-insurance for your your liability and your cargo. Is it too much money?
Yeah. So let's talk about the coverage you have, not self-insured. If you go out and buy coverage, what are your limits? It's like $1 million on liability,
damaging,
right?
Yeah.
And what's cargo these days? What are most shippers looking for as far as a limit on cargo
50,
insurance?
$1,000. I think it's $50,000. Yeah.
Okay. So if you have $1,050,000 in the bank, free and clear assets, then you can be self-insured. But you can't be self-insured unless you can at least show you have the assets to cover minimum coverage.
There's no taking out a loan like you would for a truck or a house for that?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because here's the thing. If you took out
instead
a loan,
of paying the
well, what
$1,000 a month or $2,000 a month for some people.
So what are you going to do? Go borrow $1,050,000 and put it in the bank?
Yeah, I guess.
Because then you got to pay that.
All right. Yeah, I didn't think so. But all right. I know.
So
I know
big,
the big carriers.
Big carriers can self-insure. Because any big company has to have those kind of assets sitting around just to operate your business. So they can self-insure. You are seeing that disappear, though, because these carriers have self-insured for what used to be the norm when a truck got into an accident. But with nuclear verdicts and the crazy place we are with lawsuits right now, these carriers can't afford to self-insure anymore. Because one accident, if they're self-insured in today's world, I don't care how big they are, one accident could put them out of business.
And
who is
there's
right?
another,
Werner,
another
Werner right
reason
now
to
is
grow.
Fighting, Werner right now is fighting a $100 million lawsuit, and they weren't even at fault in the accident.
We're forgetting about this as one of the reasons to grow a business. I know you're not big on growing fast, but we never talk about this self-insurance
because it's not
reason
it,
to,
it, it's
to grow.
Not, it's not a reason to grow. I'm not a big fan of self-insurance. I think even in any market, I think it's short-sighted and it's just a lousy idea. You're not saving enough money self-insuring to take that kind of risk, that one lawsuit could put you out of business. That's the other thing you have to remember about being self-insured. When you get hit with $1 million lawsuit, it's you that's going to be writing that $1 million check. How many businesses can afford that? They can't. So self-insuring
okay, so
to me is just a, not a good business model, honestly.
When we bitch about insurance rates, I guess that's what we have to think about is that, yeah, well, at least it's
so,
you know, somebody else that's having to cover us that they write that check.
Correct. That's right. This is all just – all we're talking about here, Tony, this is a good conversation, by the way. You brought up good stuff. But all we're talking about here is business 101.
Yeah, well, it's always good when somebody's bitching because you know you're going to have people on your side because everybody is good at bitching. I don't
yeah.
do it much, but I'm damn good at it, aren't I? And I can come up with more stuff. It's just I'm kind of tired of it right now. But I guarantee you I'll think of something in a few minutes.
All right. Well, we're going to cut you loose then because it has been good. But we did get people interested. People want to talk about this. So thank you for a good conversation. Let's go to Louisiana. Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. So before I get to my point, he brought up this about self-insured and insurance. And I started this in 2014. I started car hauling in 2015, June. I completely got my authority 3 months later after I had made a bad business decision. In December of 2015, I had a fender bender in Chicago. After it was all said and done, it was like the biomedical engineer or biomechanical engineer, whatever you want to call it, for the insurance company, determined she pulled into me. However, we didn't have cameras or anything like that. 6 months later, this was in December. So in the summer of 2016, I get sued for $1 million. And that went – seriously, it went on
over
for 3 years.
Over a fender bender.
Well, it was more than that. She caught,
okay.
She cut it into my trailer, and it ripped the side off of her car like a tuna fish can. And
– Was there any personal injury? Did anybody go to the hospital?
No, they didn't.
Then it's
she
a fender
sat at
bender.
Home.
Then it's
she
a fender
watched,
bender.
She sat at home and watched TV and decided that she was hurt about 3 months later and hired a one of these ambulance chasers in Chicago, which is by far the worst place you can get into an accident for liability. It's the worst. Cook County is the absolute worst, I was told. The insurance company guy I dealt with initially, it was so bad that he moved over in Indiana, commuted an hour and a half each way to Bolingbrook. So,
yeah.
So I get sued. It went on for three and a half years. And I got deposed and everything. We were about to go to court, and they settled out of court for $600,000. But it had lasted so long that it rolled off of my my record. That's how long it lasted. That's one of the reasons why I'm still in. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is an interesting topic, and it fascinates me, the whole lawsuit, attorneys, tort reform, all this stuff about lawsuits and liability and nuclear verdicts. I'm fascinated with this, and I went back. One of my favorite authors is I just drew a blank on his name, and I just read 10 of his books in the last month. The guy that writes all the legal thrillers, he wrote The Firm.
It's not Gresham, is it?
Yeah, John Grisham. Yeah.
Okay.
I just this last month, I went back and realized I used to read every book he wrote as they came out. And at some point, I must have stopped, and I didn't realize how many books he had out that I hadn't read yet. And I started reading him again, and my God, he just gets better and better. I mean, his storytelling is so good. But anybody that wants to understand more of how these big product liability and truck accident lawsuits work, just start listening to Grisham books, because he does such an amazing job of telling you how this works from the attorney side of things. And it is absolutely insane. Now, here's the interesting thing. If I had to say how I feel about this kind of stuff, I would say that these big nuclear verdicts have to stop. You know, this is killing some industries. The medical industry is a mess because of this. It's hitting the trucking industry hard. So I would be in favor of tort reform and limits on these lawsuits. But when I read these books, I start to change my mind a little bit. Not a lot. I haven't gone fully to the other side. But I kind of understand why we're seeing these nuclear verdicts. Because here's a good example. The Big Pharma. Big Pharma is one of the best examples of this. Big Pharma does their testing on a drug, and every drug has problems. There are no drugs that don't have side effects. And some drugs can have some pretty horrendous side effects, but maybe it's only for a small percentage of people. Maybe it's only 1 or 2% of the people that take this drug will have this really horrendous side effect. Well, I mean, in my mind, you shouldn't put that drug on the market then. I mean, the thought that a drug is going to kill somebody, and they do kill people all the time, is just wrong. But these pharma companies know they can put these drugs out, and they're going to make so much money on that drug that they can afford these lawsuits. And it's just a part of doing business. They already account for it. They know the lawsuits are coming. And they put money aside.
The cost is built in.
Right. And that cost keeps getting bigger and bigger. It now costs $2.6 billion to bring one drug to market. So you have to know how much money they're going to make once it gets to market. And part of bringing it to market is having enough money to pay all these crazy lawsuits. Now, that's got to stop. We can't let companies just say, we make so much money doing this, we're going to flagrantly break the law and kill people because we can afford to. And I don't know how you stop that. But one of the ways is with these crazy big nuclear verdicts that would punish these companies so bad it would put them out of business. I don't want that either, but we have to figure out a way to solve this. And I don't know.
Let me tell you why trucking's a target. Because they know, the lawyers know, that every commercial truck that runs up and down the road, well, the requirement's 750,000, but they know that 99% of the trucks have at least $1 million liability. So the same accident that would happen in a car, they will not go after them. But because you're carrying $1 million, go ahead.
Hey, Mark. Yeah, let me get you up to speed here because this has changed. That used to be true. Now I will tell you, these lawyers won't get out of bed in the morning for $1 million. They laugh at $1 million. Come on, they're going after Werner for $100 million, and Werner wasn't even at fault. Do you know why trucking is a target? It has nothing to do with insurance or resources or anything. And this, again, I didn't know this until I read these books, but this is why trucking is a target. People are afraid of trucks. They're scary. They're out on the road every day with these trucks. They see the accidents they cause. They're terrified of these things. So one of these slick tort lawyers can get in front of a jury and talk about how 4 people got killed in this accident because of these big bad trucks, that hits home. That's why it has nothing to do with insurance or resources. It's easy to win in front of a jury because people are afraid of trucks.
And you see the billboards all up and down the interstate.
Right, exactly.
Lawyers.
That's why.
Pursue trucks. Yeah.
That's why. Now, Big Pharma gets sued because they need to be sued. They made a mistake. They hurt people. They need to be punished and punished heavily. And you have to punish them heavily because they have so much money. A $10 million lawsuit to them is peanuts. They get hit with $400 million lawsuits. When you kill 50 people with a drug, the numbers go through the roof, but you have to hit these drug companies that hard, and that isn't even enough. They just keep doing it because they can afford it.
Totally agree with you.
But now here's why trucking is so bad. You will never get Big Pharma to settle or pay or win a lawsuit if it wasn't their fault. If they put out a drug and the drug really doesn't hurt anybody, but somebody tries to claim they did, you're not going to win ever. But in trucking, for some reason, and this is how people are so afraid of trucks, that in this Werner case, $100 million, here's what happened. The Werner driver's driving down the road, minding his own business, not doing anything wrong. On the other side of the highway, a car hits an icy patch, goes through the center strip, hits Werner head on. Werner is not at fault in any way, and they may end up paying $100 million on this.
Yeah, well, I have another one for you. I was in Dallas at the Manheim unloading a car off my truck because I put it on the rear end, the truck I have now. And I was backing it off, and this person came along in an SUV pulling a trailer that I guess he checked out of the auction. And we scraped fenders. I paid for my damage. He found a lawyer. He was from the Middle East. He found a Middle Eastern descent lawyer who's a Republican and the mayor of Keller, Texas. And they called my insurance company, and they asked for $1 million. They ended up getting $80,000. I didn't have a say over that. I chewed the attorney out. I said, that's insurance fraud. That's absolute insurance fraud. And I have to carry it. It falls off this summer, off my record. But it's like the amount of damage I paid for out of my pocket on that Nissan Sentra was $1,800. It was inflated a little bit because it was a dealership put a cost on it. So it really was. And he was out there in flip flops. And then, you know, a week later, they call up and ask for $1 million. $1 million.
Yeah.
Mark,
remember what I said? Attorneys will barely get out of bed in the morning for $1 million today. That's their starting point on small cases.
That's why they don't care about what happens in car wrecks out there. A truck, they could.
This is one of the few. Now, look, attorneys go after everything you can imagine. Every industry, every company. They look, I almost had to deal with the lawsuit during the financial crash in 07 and 08. I was doing active financial planning for people back then. And when the market crashes, it's going to start happening again right now. When the market crashes, the attorneys go after the financial planners. You gave this person bad advice. They lost $40,000 in their retirement account, and it's your fault. They go after everybody. That's what attorneys do. Here's the difference, though. For some reason in trucking, you don't even have to be at fault. I know a case, FedEx, when I was at FedEx. FedEx paid out, I forget the amount, but it was tens of millions of dollars because a delivery driver in the van backed over somebody who was sleeping on the ground.
In a
parking lot, in a place where you would fully expect vehicles to be, and the FedEx driver backed over somebody, had no idea they were there. We can miss entire trucks and cars in our mirrors when we have blind spots. How are you going to see somebody laying on the ground? The only way you would be able to avoid that in most situations is before you backed up, you'd have to get out, walk around your vehicle. But this guy was drunk, high on three different drugs, and he got killed. And because of that, even though there was really no fault assigned, FedEx paid out because they will not take these cases in front of a jury because
they
are afraid of a jury awarding $100 million instead of $10
million. Yeah, that's why that lady in Dallas that they outsourced to paid out that $78,000 to this guy because there was nothing. And he had a record of a history. The insurance, my insurance broker looked him up. And they said he's got a history of this. They knew that.
Well, here's something else that'll tell you how different trucking is. Trucking is such a target that one of our big scams right now are staged accidents.
Yeah, down here in New Orleans.
Oh, you are in the epicenter of it.
New Orleans all the time. I'm really aware of what's going on. I watch and like.
New Orleans is ground zero for staged truck decks. And you know who's doing it down there? You know who arranges all this? Yeah, this is absolutely the mob doing this.
Yeah. The reason I called was to talk about pick up where what's his name from truckstop.com left off and
Brent
left off about qualifying your customer, and then Tony went into this whole diatribe about it's not you should just be paid immediately. Well, that's not how business works. I mean, it doesn't make a difference if you're driving if you got a trucking business or, you know, running the grocery store or whatever. There's just set guidelines on how people pay, and it's like they float this credit around, and it's like, my dentist allows me a little bit of a credit. I told her, I said, I'm going in to get something done this week, and it's like, I said, hey, she knows me and all. I said, I'll pay a third now and I'll pay the rest when I come in. And she's like, I said, because I can float it down the road a little ways. I'll pay it off down the road, but it allows me better cash flow in different areas that I need it at. So,
right.
But there's,
so you're right. Business, this is very, very common. Business to business transactions, net 30 is really common. It's not like you're like financing somebody because you're not allowing them to make payments over time, but you're just saying, look, we'll ship you the goods now or, you know, we'll pull the load now. You don't have to pay us for 30 days or, you know,
company gives you 30 days. I mean, they give you 30 days.
Yeah.
Everybody gives everybody.
So this
is
pretty common, but I will tell you this. We made the decision, mostly Lisa, because she does all this, but we all agreed to it, even though every single one of our vendors, and look at all the different products in our store. There's a lot, right? I mean, we have a lot of stuff in our store. Those are all individual vendors that we have to deal with and negotiate with. Every one of those vendors, with maybe a few exceptions, would extend us credit. They would allow us to pay in 30 days. We never do. We pay when we place the order. I don't want that credit out there. I don't want to have to worry about managing it, thinking about it, getting stuck. We pay every vendor when we place the order.
Well, and qualify, I've said this before, qualifying your customers is like, you have to qualify your customers. And if somebody's a risk not to pay you, don't do business with them.
That's
just
exactly
don't do
right.
Business.
Correct.
Just, and then I see these people time and time again, do business with these people that they really don't know who they are. And
well,
then they don't get paid or they don't
hey,
know
Mark,
how to invoice. Go ahead.
Mark, I want you to do this because I know you talk to a lot of people about this kind of stuff. When you're talking to people about this, you know, the fact that when you accept a load, you're extending credit to somebody, you're going to go pull that load and you haven't
yeah.
gotten paid for it yet. That means you're
right.
extending credit to somebody. I want you to ask these people when this subject comes up, ask them if they know how to check the credit of a business. And most don't. They don't have a clue.
Well, I know that there's a company affiliated with NASTIC called Orange Commercial Credit, and that guy was there this year. I forget his name right now. But the Orange Commercial Credit owns the company that keeps up with the credit for these brokers and carriers and whatnot. And so while
so,
I don't
you're right.
subscribe to him, I could call that guy. That's how I would do it. I would call Chuck. His name's Chuck. I forget his last name. Anyway, I'd call Chuck, and I'd say, I did it one time. I said, hey, could you just as a complimentary do me a quick credit check on somebody? And he did.
Right. Now,
you know,
we're going to be teaching this in the CMC, and you can check through companies like that that specifically work in the trucking industry to check that credit. Then you can also go to Dun and Bradstreet and check that. Now, Dun and Bradstreet is like Equifax.
It's like Equifax, yeah. We used them with Penske. We used them. We had to get a Dun's number,
right.
call in, and they would tell you
yep.
you could have credit right there
right.
and there. I've used
so there
them
are,
before when I worked for Penske.
There are multiple ways to check a business's credit, and yet most small carriers have no idea how to do it.
No, they don't. And they're just gambling because they don't know that these people, you know, what their track record is. They don't read the reviews. That's the first thing I do if I ever – I haven't used Central Dispatching forever, although I'll pay them. But I go in there and I look at the reviews and I read it, and they'll tell you that they pay slow pay this, that, and the other. You know, and it's like, you know, you can read reviews. There's different ways to research. It's like, you know, how long has this company been in business? Have they been in business this long? There's different, various ways to look at these companies. But I mean, do not do business with people that are high risk, and you won't have this problem.
Here's a policy. If I were a small carrier right now and I've been extending credit to brokers, this would be a time I would start to change my tactics. Not only am I going to go check their credit, I'm also going to check their history. And honestly, at this point in the game, I would probably have a policy. You know how owner-operators get so pissed off when a broker won't use them because their authority is too new?
Yeah.
I would be doing this to them. If this broker has not been in business for 10 years in this market, I'm just going to pass them by. I'm going to go build relationships with brokers that have been through a downturn, just like this company Brent and I just talked about, the broker that just went bankrupt. I'm positive they're going to leave a bunch of carriers not getting paid. They got into business in 2001. These are people
yeah.
who got into business at the very top of the market. Odds of them making it through this are much less. So if you understand these things, then you can protect yourself. But so many small carriers are running around completely ignorant of all these things we're talking about right now.
They are. It's just amazing to me. It's like you've got all this invested in this truck and this business. And yet you run out there and do business with the first person that'll give you a load. That's absolutely insane. It's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know how I came up. I came up from the, I told Paul and Harold, we were on the three-way yesterday. I said, I started at the absolute bottom. There was nowhere else for me to go but up. Paul said, well, you could have went out of business. I said, well, that was an option. I
but
just never looked
most
at it as
of
an
us
option.
Did.
But,
Most of us in our world, you know, the small carrier, owner-operator world, the people we talk to all the time, most of us started with almost nothing.
I started with a credit card. I put $2,000 down on the trailer, and Chrysler Capital extended me credit. And I had a truck and a trailer, and I went, you know.
I've told this story. I was able to buy my first truck for $8,000 with no money down whatsoever. But I was in such poor financial shape at the time, I had to borrow $400 for the plane ticket to fly down to get the truck.
But I learned things along the way. Like when I worked at Penske, it was like if you made a bad business decision to extend credit to somebody, you wouldn't be fired. In fact, you could not rent. Jim Overfield at Penske Truck Leasing in Houston, Texas, would not allow you to rent a truck. To a trucking company. Why? Because the reputation of not paying your bills. He wouldn't allow
when,
it. And this was
when
in the early 2000s.
When I first started renting trucks, and it was a fairly common thing for me at FedEx because I had dedicated runs that had to go. I had drivers that needed to work every day. I couldn't just say, my truck's in the shop. I'm not going to cover this today. Well, you could, but you'd start losing points, and it was just a bad idea. So I would rent trucks. In the beginning, nobody would rent me a truck unless FedEx actually signed for it. FedEx would do that for us. They set up a program that we could go rent trucks through Penske. We paid everything, but they would not have rented me a truck at that time, no matter what I did.
FedEx was on the list. FedEx had a national account. Come in, give them the number, do it, here's your truck.
Right.
Because they guaranteed it. We didn't know him, but yeah.
I could not rent a truck on my own from them.
We wouldn't rent to you. I mean, there was nobody. You could not. That was forbidden.
Right.
Jim Overfield would fire you on the spot if he found out you did that. Knew that. So you just didn't rent to a trucking company. Because you had to ask them what kind of business. And he'd say a truck company. Then you'd ask what's their DUNS number. And then we don't have what's that? Well, you don't have if you don't have a DUNS number, we wouldn't rent to you. Somebody walked in through, we could extend credit. But if they didn't have a DUNS number, we couldn't extend credit. So I carried that information that I learned through that into this. And I'm very, very suspicious. But now, I mean, right now, I have just one customer, my main customer, that I made $325,000 off of last year. I get paid every Thursday. They have the money.
Perfect.
You know, it's like what I'm going to deliver tomorrow morning, I'll be paid on Thursday. But that's what they do. And then I have my second one. It's like every 2 weeks they send me an e-check, an email. Here it comes. And then a couple of people I do 30 days on. And it's just what they do. And it's like, you know, and some will offer a quick pay, but all they're doing is running a factoring fee or whatever. And I'm just like, nah, I'll just wait on my money. I cannot understand and comprehend how these people, they get on Twitter every day, the NOOA, whatever the hell these people are, and they complain and they don't recognize. Tony's like, that's not my customer. That is your customer. They pay your bills. And I let my customers know that they're my customer. I'm getting graded by my main customer now. That's probably the only way they can control some of these people. And it's like when I left the plant last night over in West Point, I sent an email, left West Point. I'll update later.
Yeah.
This morning I said, I'm doing 34. I'll deliver tomorrow afternoon at 3:00 in Houston. And I send it to them constantly because I want to be at the top tier. I want to be. And the fact they called me on Friday afternoon and said, "Oh, you're going to you got a load over there. You're going to deliver on the weekend." Yeah, I'll be able to deliver. We got a West Point. Which I said I won't be able to deliver, but I can load it on Sunday. So they gave it to me.
Yeah. So
never made the board.
Here's how bad this is, you know, and. We're talking about NOAA and these groups, and you're familiar with Mac, right?
Yeah, I don't talk to him.
Mac's been around a long time. I mean, when it comes to trucking itself, he knows what he's doing. He's good at this. He's been doing it a long time. But he has, like, zero concept of how business works. And here's what he told me. Because you know me, I'm the one pushing all the time. That broker's your customer. You better start treating them that way. And he went off on me one day in a space. He was you know how he gets. He was screaming at me. That's not my customer. And I said, Mac, who paid you? I don't care. That's not my customer. And I said, all right, Mac, here's the deal. The way you succeed in business is providing value to your customer, more value than anybody else. So tell me who your customer is then. If it's not the broker, the person that paid you, tell me who it is. Well, it's the shipper. It's their freight. I said, here's the problem, Mac. That shipper does not want a relationship with you. If they did, they would come to you. They went to the broker. So now you're in a position, you are in one of the worst positions I could imagine. You don't have a customer. You have a business, but in your mind, you don't have a customer. Or the customer you think is your customer isn't, and they don't want you to be their customer. They don't want to be your customer. They don't want it. So you, in my mind, you now have no way to succeed because you don't have a customer you're willing to provide value for. Who's going to do business with you? Nobody but the worst freight out there. That's all you're ever going to pull is the garbage freight that's on the load board because you don't understand customer service.
You said a very important word right there, and you said it 10 times, value. People do not understand what value means. They think value is like if you have $10, that $10 value, that's not what value is.
Right.
Value is what you bring. Value is something that you can't touch it, you can't feel it, but it's there.
That's right.
It's like I'm valuable to my customer because they called me and knew I could get this load out. They gave it to me despite the fact I had to do a 34-hour break. And I told them that. And I called them. What do you want me to do? How can I better serve you? What are the metrics I'm being graded on now? I want to know because I told them I want to be your number one go-to person.
There you go. The easiest way I can explain this, I mean, I could do hours on this topic. And in the CMC, I'm going to do a lot of this. But here's one of the easiest ways to, I think this would help people to understand the value. And in trucking, it's actually fairly, in most businesses, honestly, it's fairly simple to provide value. Here's what you need to do. Here's what you should focus on. Solve problems. Transportation is complicated. Lots of things go wrong in the movement of freight. It's not a simple thing. Every load is a little different. Every day is a little different. The best way to provide value to your customer as a small carrier, whether your customer is a shipper or the broker, is get really good at solving the kind of problems we run into every day. That's the value they want to see from us.
Yeah, they want to know where their load is. You know, people get upset. They're like, why are they tracking me? I could care less if they track me. I don't care. I go out of my way to send emails that as soon as I get checked out of the Kia over there, I send an email. I am out of the gate at Kia. We're out. I'll update later. This morning, first thing I did, I sent them an email. I said to the whole dispatch section there, and the two people I need to know that update this. I'm like, around 3 o'clock tomorrow. And now I extended it out about an hour because I think I could be there sooner, but I didn't want to get their hopes up too high. But it will be there tomorrow, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. But
you know,
I
tell stories about this all the time about my experience and I'll go back to FedEx again, and I'm going way back. The first year I started with them, it was RPS back then. They were a little company. They weren't paying very much. Nobody wanted to go work for them because their rates were so low. I saw some potential there, and I saw an opportunity that fit my situation. So I leased a truck on, and then I leased another truck on. And one of the first times I was – now, I try to provide value every day. You know, be on time, be pleasant, get the job done, don't bitch about everything, just the basic stuff. I try to do that every day. But I always look for those opportunities where I can really shine. And the first opportunity I had at FedEx, and it kind of, built that relationship early, was when in the first year I was there, UPS went on strike. And it was an absolute disaster for RPS. Because all they could see were dollar signs, all these packages, and they would not tell anybody no. companies that had never even talked to RPS about moving their packages were now begging them because UPS was on strike. And RPS didn't have enough experience at this, and they kept saying yes, and they shut down our entire system. Our building,
yeah.
There was not one more place left to try to stuff a package into that building. We had them in offices. We had them in the hallways. We had them in the garage. There was no place else to put them, and we didn't have enough people to move all this freight. I at the time, also had some trucks with my own authority, and I had some trailers. So it was totally illegal. There were a lot of things that were wrong with it, but nobody cared. I took my trailers and took them over there and started loading them and running those packages down to our hub in Columbus. And that was way above and beyond, but that was like the first time I really proved to them, hey, look, I can bring a lot of value. I'm a troubleshooter. I'll solve your problems.
Yeah. And I know people that will load trucks and sit on the load for the weekend. I grabbed my load. I got a load Friday. It had five stops in Louisiana. I loaded it Friday. I delivered it Saturday. I was trying to get a load from my main customer, and he emailed me. He texted me back. He said, we just don't have anything. I said, never mind. I got a load of Hyundai's. I'm going to go to Louisiana. And then he's like, you can deliver that? I said, yeah, I've been to all these places. I'll take it on. I can get it delivered tomorrow. And he called me, and he goes, I got a West Point straight to Houston, one pick, one drop. I said, I can't get it delivered, but I can load it. But if you don't want to give it to me, I understand if you want it to be delivered on Monday. If not, I have to deliver it on Tuesday. But he gave it to me anyway. But he didn't call anybody else or whatever. He called me
right. Because
I go out of my way to make sure that as soon as I load it, I let them know I'm within their time frames that they're grading me on. And I know it puts pressure on me, but it's like, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I got to cut you loose. I got to get to a couple more calls, and we're out of show time today because of the problems we had. So at some point, they're going to cut us off here. One of the things I'm really excited about the CMC this time is the live CMC. Even with 5 days, this is a topic I just never spent much time on because I couldn't. I wanted to teach people the real hard-hitting stuff that would put money right back in their pocket. You know, fuel mileage, maintenance, financial plan, all that stuff. But this idea of just really, really good business practices, providing value, troubleshooting, specifically in trucking. Now, with a whole year, I have a huge section on all of this stuff, and I'm really excited about finally teaching this.
Customer service.
Yes. Yeah, and it's
real.
You know, it, on one hand, it's really simple. Provide as much value as you can to your customer, and you'll succeed every time. But the real tricky part is how. How does that work? What does that look like? And that's what we're going to spend a lot of time on. So with that, Mark, I got to cut you loose. Want to make sure I get these last two calls in before they turn us off today. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome.
Howdy.
I got
a message. Well, brokers, but I got a message for Tony. If he follows me to Louisville, he'll be seeing a red flag all the way. It's hanging on the back of the trailer.
There you go.
Yeah. So, brokers going out of business. So if you follow OIDA's logic and that NOAA group, they're taking 30, 40, 50% of the rate. Yeah, they're going out of business. Things are going to get real tough.
Look, I can promise you this. I'll even forget the 30, 40, 50% stuff. Any broker that could consistently keep 20% of the freight would never be in danger of going out of business. That's all it would take. If you could consistently get 20%, you would never be at risk of going out of business.
Yeah. So last year, I did 100. I looked in my book because I keep notes. I did 115 loads total.
Okay.
And there was only 14 that were not direct freight from the carrier that I'm leased to. And
okay.
This year, I have not pulled any other freight except the freight from the carrier I'm leased to.
Right.
And I'm still making money. And I do way more empty miles than what Mark does.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
He doesn't have any freight of his own.
Right.
So all of his loads are broker loads. I don't have any freight of my own, but the carrier I'm leased to, we got plenty of it. So
yeah, so it's not brokered loads. It's your freight through the carrier.
Yeah. So, but I don't want to have to work as hard. I get paid twice a month, whether they get paid or not. And one time it did happen. They got a couple of hundred grand deep into someone that went bankrupt, and they didn't get paid. So you actually got a double what they lost, because they didn't get that money in, but they still had to pay us lease operators. So they spent that. So they actually doubled their loss.
If I remember right, I'm not sure if this is right or not, but I think today might actually be the day the government's going to try to put a stop to all that.
Oh, yeah, March the 11th. Yeah, they're meant to be doing some stupid shit, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, that's today, the new Department of Labor ruling on who is an independent contractor and who isn't starts today. And here's the biggest problem with it. I got into another fight with the NOA guys and Mac over this. They swear that this has nothing to do with trucking. It's not going to stop you leasing to a carrier. Well, if you believe that, you're an idiot. Because the attorneys I talked to that have been studying this forever said, we have no idea what this ruling is going to do. The wording of it is so vague that if the government wanted to, they could go to any independent contractor and put them out of business with this ruling. It's too vague. Nobody knows how they're going to interpret it. And that's what everybody is afraid of. When the government writes rules like this that are so vague, what they're doing,
open-ended,
they're creating a system where they get to decide each individual case if they want to. There's no clear ruling anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and here's the other thing that I hate about this. I talk about this all the time. All these goofy government alphabet agencies with initials, the FDA, the EPA, the FMCSA, the DOT, the DOL, the Department of Labor. I mean, we have so many damn agencies. This is the first time in 40-some years of being in this industry that I have ever heard the Department of Labor even get involved in this.
Yeah.
This issue has always been either at the federal level, it's decided by the IRS. It's been that way forever. They have a 21-question test. Or it might be a state issue where you're going to be dealing with workers' comp or unemployment or something like that. But all of a sudden, now the 800-pound gorilla in the room is the Department of Labor. We've never had to deal with them before.
Well, I was listening to an OIDA show a couple of weeks ago, and there's a couple of terms that they're not happy with, but by the sound of it, overall, they're quite happy with it, and they'll say, oh, no, it won't affect you from being leased to a carrier. Well, obviously,
bullshit.
they got lawyers that can read shit different. I don't know. So, but I'll leave you with one thing. When I went to Washington D.C. one time as a tourist, had an Indian guy. His name was Madhu, and he drove us around, and he said, USA, he said, they always abbreviate everything, FBI, CIA, DMV. And he said, over there you have the House Office Building. He said, so that's the HOB. And he said, across the street is the Senate Office Building. So that would have been the SOBs.
Yeah,
right,
that's right.
I'll leave you with that.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks for the call. All right, let's wrap this up in Indiana today. Brent, welcome.
Hey, Kevin. What a roller coaster ride and calls today. I just had to check in. I think that Tony's, my impression is that, and I see this in many people, and I've felt it in myself in my younger years, is until he sheds that notion of a victim mentality, he's never going to get anywhere with this.
Hey, Brent.
He's just pounding his head against the wall.
I'm going to I'm going to tune you into a little secret. Now, I don't want everybody to know this, so this is just between you and I. Don't spread this around, all right?
Okay.
It's all an act.
Oh, all right.
It is.
All right.
He knows what he's doing. But I like it because I want to have those kind of discussions more, but the people who really think that way won't call me and debate me.
And those are the people then with the victim mentality. They feel like they're,
absolutely,
you know,
right,
they're, and they'll never, ever succeed, and they'll never compete.
Right. I've actually identified two mentalities in them now. They absolutely have the victim mentality, but there's a new one I've identified lately. All of these people also have an entitlement mentality.
Oh,
they believe that just because they bought a truck and got into business, they're entitled to a profit.
It's not just the ones that bought a truck. It's a lot of them also that drive somebody else's truck. I've been a company driver.
If you even look at what NOOA now and the SBTC and James Lamb, they're pushing for a national minimum freight rate because they claim too many small carriers are going out of business. Good. We need them to go out of business.
Good. Exactly. I was a fuel hauler for many years.
To me, that's a horrible idea because I want those people to go out of business and get the hell out of my way so we can go back to moving freight at a profit. These groups, though, those are the people that everybody in these groups, the SBTC, the NOO, they are the people that are most at risk of going out of business. That's why they're screaming for this minimum freight rate to try to save themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Reason I wanted to call in was about I'm looking and I'm going to be becoming an owner-operator. And I know there's people out there going, are you out of your mind to do this at this time? I think it's a perfect time to do it. You've said it before.
Yep.
If I can make it while the market is at the bottom, I can make it any time. And if I can start at the bottom.
Let's turn that around, too, because we want to think about it the other way, too. If you don't start at the bottom, how do you know you can make it through the next bottom?
Exactly. And now, right now, I'm looking at different trucks to buy, and everything is just getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah,
everybody is. I've checked on a few trucks, and I've had guys texting me back going, "I'll take another $1,000 off, another $2,000, another $5,000 off," and they keep checking back with me. And I'm like, I don't love the truck, so but anyhow. I'm kind of working in a circle here, and I know I need to start with figuring out and nailing down the lane I'm going to work in. And as my years of driving as a company driver, my two most successful lanes have been in the one I'm in now, which is not exactly car hauling, but it's close to it. And the other is tanker, both food grade as a fuel hauler.
Let me correct something just because I was confused there for a second, too. And I almost said something. No. Don't use the word lane because we use that, you know, a lane being from Austin, Texas to Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, sure.
What you're referring to, we usually use the word segment. What segment of the industry do you want to be in? Okay. Now, because I was about to say when you said lane, I was going to say, hey, wait a minute. Don't just focus on one lane.
No.
Okay, got it. You're trying to figure out what segment you want to be in.
Thank you. So I've looked at I really like what I'm doing now because I load my own truck and I unload my own truck.
Okay.
In not all cases, but a lot of times I can load 24/7 and I can unload 24/7. Usually unload.
Nice.
Sometimes you have to wait on somebody, but I make my own schedule through the week. So I can run as hard as I want and then go home. I really like that. Tanker, fuel hauling is a 24/7 business. So a lot of times you can do that 24/7. Not always, but quite often. And so I'm trying to weigh the positives and negatives between the two. I know car hauling getting fuel mileage is going to be tough, and the equipment that you need is more specific. But I really want to try and get a hold of – I don't know how to get a hold of Paul because I have questions about getting into car hauling, and I've done some research on it. What I do is
hey,
kind of
hey,
like
Brett,
next to that. Yeah.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. When we finish up today, before I cut you loose, I will put you back on hold. I'll have Morgan get your information, and we can then reach out to both Paul and Mark. Both of them are really good car haulers. And I know in the past they've been more than willing to talk to somebody and help them. I can't speak for them, but I'm pretty sure they would take some time to you. So we'll see if we can arrange that.
Yeah, basically what I'm doing now is I'm hauling chassis that are stacked on a low boy. Kind of like you see decked tractors, but instead they're decked on a trailer. So I've been doing that for a while, and it takes a knack. I've always looked for the segment where anytime I go to anything where somebody goes, oh man, I would never do that. I mean, like, I'm all in, because if you won't do it, there's other people that won't do it. And that means you're going to have to pay me more to get me
to do it.
And that's where the money's at, is I've always sought out the things that other people are unwilling to do.
That's a good point. That's where the money is. Yeah.
Yeah, so, when I hauled fuel, everybody's like, oh, man, I'm not going to drive that fuel tanker, giant bomb. I said, you're right. You're scared of it. Stay away. Stay out of the business.
You've actually had people say that every time.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I would be unloading a tanker. They would walk up to me at a gas station smoking a cigarette, and I'd be like, whoa, step back. And go, man, I wouldn't want to do that, hanging around a bomb. I'm like, you're close enough. If it goes up, you're going with me.
Let's put a little logic to this. Clearly there's danger there, but in the real world, how often do tankers blow up? It's pretty damn rare.
It's one of those things where it's kind of like riding a motorcycle. If you ride a motorcycle, there's really no such thing as a fender bender. If you go down, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
If you go down in a tanker, fuel hauler, it's probably going to hurt. And it may be bad. But that's the risk you assume a certain level of risk.
Right.
If you become a soldier and you go into the military, you're taking on a certain level of risk.
Yeah, the thing is, we know that trucking itself is one of the more dangerous occupations. They always make the top 10 list. Sometimes they make the top 5. Being out on the highway all day long is taking on a ton of risk. So the fact that they would separate out a tanker and think that there's too much risk to go do that seems odd to me.
I don't know.
Huh. Yeah.
I've never understood it, but you know, it's one of those things where you have to be smart, and you have to be, you know, you have to pay attention. If you do your job well and you're careful about the way you do it, your risk is heavily mitigated. And I've known people that have had accidents that they were sloppy, and if you do that, we'll pay dearly.
Yeah,
if you wrangle rattlesnakes, you're going to get bit sooner or later. You got to pay the guy who does that a lot of money. And so I'm willing to take that on because anyhow.
There you go.
That's the two segments that I'm looking at. Tanker, I know, generally you're going to get better fuel economy. It's going to be easier to get better fuel economy. So there's that. My other issue is that I'm 6'2", and trying to ride in a chop-topped 9-car hauler, you know, and trying to sleep in it is good. I really like at least the mid-roof. So that's kind of one of my thoughts is wanted to talk to Paul and them about is like looking at an 8-car setup to where it's all on the trailer and you could have either a condo or a mid-roof tractor. And whether or not that is how much of a disadvantage you are at that point. So that's kind of my thing. I haven't determined yet. And that'll dictate a little bit as to what truck I end up looking for. So.
Yeah. Perfect.
So anyhow, So yeah, if I could get a hold of them, or you know, somebody to talk to, I was trying to find them on the line, so or on Facebook.
Yeah,
and stuff,
but I
didn't know who.
No, I'll put you on hold. We'll get your information and pass it on to them.
Okay.
So are you coming to the CMC?
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh,
yep. My
perfect.
Wife and I will be there, perfect. And we're got everything all laid out, hotel room all set. We were calling the second day after you announced, so we were
excellent.
Early on.
All right. Look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold, Morgan, if you could get his information, phone, email, social media accounts, whatever, and we will pass that along. Let's figure out how we should pass that along. Get the information, then we'll figure it out. Mark and Paul are probably both listening. So you guys reach out to us, or we'll reach out to you, or if you want to help this guy out, we'll try to make that happen. All right, I am going to wrap this up because we're all out of time, and I can't take any more calls. So I am going to get on with my day. I've got the CMC to work on. We may be doing another test today. I haven't really heard yet. I'm going to check on that when I get off the air here. If not today, I'm sure we'll be doing another test of our software sometime this week. First test was really good for us. I know it was a little difficult for the callers, and we really didn't get a lot done. We didn't actually run it like a real live show. We thought we might be able to, but it was good for us because we found a lot of bugs that were, I don't want to say easy to fix, but at least we know we can fix them. We didn't run into any issues that stumped us. So it was really just a matter of going back and tweaking and adjusting. And so I think they worked on it over the weekend, and we might be able to test again today. So we're going to work on that. All right, we will see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.